Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Well, define driving to Butler, because that, if that means, have I left the town in which I live in Michigan? No. Am I in the car heading to Butler? Yes, as a matter of fact, I am.
You have a long way to go, man.
four and a half, five hours. And, you know, the nice thing is, well, not nice, I shouldn't say, but being a work trip, not taking my family to my mom's house for Thanksgiving, they will stay here with my wife's parents. So, but, you know, it's going to be a busy, it's already a busy trip, and that's partly why I'm on the late drive out now, because the charges finally came down for the tunnel incident that James Franklin predicted.
And what are the charges?
Well, let me get that for you, because there were 7 of the 8 players were charged that were suspended by Michigan State. The only one who was not was freshman Malcolm Jones. So for Kari Crump, 1 count of felonious assault. He is the one on the video shown swinging a helmet.
Yes.
And then the rest of the 7 players, it appears, Atavian Brown. Well, we'll start with Jacoby Windman, Zion Young, Brandon Wright, Justin White, Angelo Gross, and Atavian Brown, all with 1 count of aggravated assault, which are misdemeanors. So 6 misdemeanors and the extra point for the felony.
So what are the players potentially facing in terms of, you know, what are the sentencing guidelines in Michigan around these charges?
Well, my understanding in speaking to a couple of the attorneys involved is a lot of this will end up being probationary stuff.
Got it.
With the opportunity for expungement through the Holmes Useful Trainees Act. But it is, I have to reach out to some people in the know and historically, because I cannot recall a situation where criminal charges have come in the flow of a game management.
Right.
From one of the participants, at least not in my time around the Big Ten, which kind of spans about 25, 30 years. So certainly it's a very interesting situation. And I think that's a big reason the Big Ten hasn't weighed in on this. Very big reason the Big Ten hasn't weighed on this, because they didn't know what was coming in terms of legal sense. So now that that happened, I'm sure we'll probably in short order hear from them. And, you know, I've spoken with a couple of attorneys that the 2 Michigan players have both been accused by the Michigan State side of physically starting the altercation. So if the month that will never end rolls on into month 2.
Amazing. And does this mean on the Michigan State side, even those charged with misdemeanors, they are still suspended?
I would imagine so. You know, it was Mel Tucker's call in consult with Athletic Director Alan Haller, who was a former Michigan State University police officer and a former football player, played for the Steelers for a little bit too.
Yes.
In previously talking to Mel Tucker, one of the things he said, even if the suspensions were lifted, you know, guys were not allowed to participate in meetings or practices, so they probably wouldn't be able to play anyways, even if that gets to that situation. And quite frankly, it's a do-or-die game for Michigan State. You know, I mean, they can get in at 5-7 to a bowl game with a loss, but,
yeah,
you know, I don't think anyone feels secure. I think there's maybe a 20% chance of that even happening if it gets to that.
All right, so let's talk about this team. They won back-to-back games. They beat Illinois as one of them, which was like, oh, that was pretty impressive. And then beat Rutgers 28-21, and then last week's game. Statistically, they dominated the game, and Indiana only threw the ball 7 times. What were your thoughts watching that overtime loss?
I mean, new and creative ways to lose, I think. I mean, this time they gave up about almost 200 yards in kickoff returns, including a touchdown.
Yep.
That was a big momentum shifter. You know, the Peyton Thorne's interception right after that, you know, a throw in the flat to a freshman receiver who hasn't seen many snaps since the beginning of the season. You know, some curious, play calling and time management, you know, throughout the game and particularly down the stretch, a couple missed field goals. I mean, special teams just betrayed them all day, which, you know, that's, you know, it, all the momentum that they had started to rebuild. Because, I mean, the tunnel fight, you know, in some ways galvanized them. I mean, they go down to Illinois shorthanded without Jacoby Windman, who was a three-time Big Ten defensive player of the, right. the week. And, you know, they go and win that game, and they start figuring things out in their run game. And then, you know, that's a bad Indiana team. That's a mm-hmm. bad Indiana team and a bad loss and a bad way to lose, particularly when you've had a few fans that stuck around for that whole thing and watched it. I mean, it was cold, brutal. I mean, the game matched the day, and, you know, it's going to be hard for them to get off the mat. But that is one thing that this team has done all year
right.
after the Michigan game. So, mm-hmm. Certainly going to be an interesting weekend out in State College.
What has it meant to that defense? You talk about losing Windman, but what has it meant to that defense to get Jacob Slade and Xavier Henderson back?
Everything. I mean, you know, they've been able to, once they came back, particularly Henderson, because Henderson is such a quarterback on that defense, and he's so cerebral, and, you know, he's been playing at a much higher physical level than he was last year, and you know, coming off the injury this year, he did a pretty good job of getting back in the mend in a hurry and really realizing that this is it. You got to do it. And they've been able to do some different things defensively with him in there. I mean, they played a lot more. They played some 4-3 when both of them came back. Then they started blending in some dime packages with Henderson and a freshman in the middle. So there are. You know, there were definite things that they weren't able to do without him there. And then, you know, the loss of Darius Snow has hurt them too.
Yes, it has.
He was that converted safety that they've moved into that linebacker spot in the spring and summer. And really, like Henderson, a cerebral kid who knows where to be and knows where to line everybody else up. And, you know, halfway through the first game, they lose him for the season. You know, that was a loss that really started the spiral for them. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, but they, you know, once those two guys came back, it really helped. And I think it, you know, as they found a run game again, a little bit of a pulse with that offensive line, mm-hmm. That's allowed them to do some things on offense that particularly with Peyton Thorne that he wasn't able to do. I mean, you know, all eyes were on Peyton Thorne without Kenneth Walker there.
Right.
And all eyes were on Jaden Reed without Jalen Naylor, who's in the NFL too. So, it took some time to adjust to that, and really when they weren't getting the run game, you know, you could just back off and let them run into the line, get a yard or two, and then load up on the pass. And, you know, Thorne probably played one of his better games last week. You know, I don't blame him for the interception. It was in his receiver's hands, tipped him, juggled. Bad play call and wrong down distance and spot on the field. But, you know, if they want a chance this week, they need that Peyton Thorne that, you know, that threw for 300-plus last year and in his first game out of State College with nobody there, had a big game, too. They need him to really rally this team at this point. Otherwise, they're going to stay home in December.
Well, before I flip it to the offense, Chris, I want to ask about Cal Halliday. He's second to Jack Campbell in the conference of tackles. He's a Southern Columbia kid from here in the state. What have you seen from him in play and work ethic?
I just, you know, it's funny because they call him the body man. Mel Tucker calls him the body man, you know, because he doesn't wear any gloves. He doesn't wear any flair. Tucker just loves that. He called him the throwback, and you've seen it. I mean, really, you know, I went through, I should just finish the story on Cal, you know, and coming home, obviously, his dad was an All-American wrestler there at Penn
mm-hmm.
State.
Yep.
All three of his siblings went there. So there's some split allegiances, but he says they will all be in green come Saturday. But the kid's a worker. I mean, he's had some issues in pass coverage, but Michigan State linebackers all have. But when it comes to thumping downhill, he's really aggressive. You know, he's usually a pretty sure tackler. And he is a worker. I think you could see that wrestler work ethic in him. That's the reason Mark D'Antonio gave him the scholarship offer in the first place. D'Antonio loves those wrestlers and loves when they would switch to solely playing football, the things that they can do and bring to a team, both individually and collectively. And Halliday has really lived up to that. I mean, freshman All-American last year. did 19 tackles against Rutgers.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of tackles. I think he has 60 tackles in the last four games, which is four or five games. So that's impressive. He has done yeoman's work, particularly with Winman out after they moved him to linebacker.
Everyone knows about the dynamic between Peyton Thorne and Jaden Reed. You know, high school teammates, college roommates. You know, you talked about Thorne and what they need from him, and Reed is outstanding as well. What has Keon Coleman meant to that offense and his ability in 50-50 balls?
Yeah, well, to start, I will say that James Franklin brought that up this week, and I saw that they have a teammate that's on Penn State's team.
Yeah.
So they also have another teammate that's on Michigan State team as well, Cade McDonald.
Right, and Bryce Effner is the Penn State guy, by the way.
Yeah, that's four guys from the same high school, not staying within the same geographic area of Chicagoland. But and Keon Coleman's a kid from Louisiana that they got, two-sport guy. Really, I was impressed when he switched to basketball. He got a one spot duty against Michigan and drove coast to coast and finished at the rim with a layup, which was really impressive. Then Izzo really liked what he saw from him on defense and gave him first half minutes in a game at Iowa when Michigan State was missing some toughness. And he brings that to the football field. I mean, you see those 50-50 balls. It's and Reed, too. I mean, Reed, for being 6 foot, really, with the connection with Thorne, goes up and rips balls away from the defensive back. They've got that connection, but Coleman's just got the freakish physical gifts of 6'4", being able to leap out of the building. I mean, would it surprise me if he could touch the top of the goalpost? Probably not. But that definitely helped. He's had a really good second season, and it's kind of blossomed into a bona fide NFL prospect with his size, speed, and the ability to go up and high point a ball like that. And that thing is, he's probably going to play basketball again this fall. So, you know, time away from football in the spring, how does that change your development? Well, it didn't last year. He seems to be doing pretty well.
Jalen Berger's come on for them at running back, but Elijah Collins has reemerged. What's your thought on the running game right now for Michigan State, Chris?
Well, the Elijah Collins story is just so – there are guys that you cover that you can't that you see things happening and you feel bad for them.
Right.
And then a story like that where he comes back and kind of pecks his way back up the depth chart and gets 100 yards on senior day. Amazing. I mean, the kid had COVID in the summer of 2020. It really affected him. I mean, he was a 1,000-yard rusher his redshirt freshman year. He was like 990 yards. Then you see that, injuries last year. You know, he never got into a flow and got behind Berger and Jarek Roussard this year. And quickly, he became kind of a fan favorite in a lot of ways because people knew his journey and story. And that's been – you know, he ran for 107 yards, I think, last week, which is the first time since 2019 that he did that, which is impressive.
Yeah.
And Berger has come on, too. And I think a lot of that between those two guys comes down to the fact that the offensive line has been significantly better in run blocking. And that's been something that's been a problem for this team and this program for, you know, the better part of 6 or 7 years here.
Yeah.
And, you know, that Jared Horst has been out the last few games since the Michigan game. They brought in a JUCO kid, Brandon Baldwin, who was more of a basketball player in high school. He has looked solid on the left tackle. Gino Vandermark, a kid from Jersey, has kind of started to emerge at right guard.
Right.
With some injuries there. I mean, the line's pretty banged up, but they've down the stretch here really started to put some things together and create some creases. And I think for Berger especially has really started with his vision, kind of trusting what he sees and using his speed to hit the hole hard.
Yeah, one side note on Collins, he not only had the 100-yard rushing game, he had a career high in receiving yards, too, with 43 in the game against Indiana. One final question. Behringer's one of the better punters in this country. I think he's outstanding. But Coghlan had been the cog when it came to the place-kicking part, and you could rely on him in the clutch to make kicks. Obviously, at some point, everybody has to move on, right? So what?
Here's from Matt Coghlan. He was there. He was on the Tommy Boy plan.
Yeah, that's right. Well, guess what? That means that he had to be replaced. What kind of struggle has that been?
that's been hard to watch because Michigan State's usually had some really good kickers over the, not just the years, over the decades. You know, you think back to like Morton Anderson.
Yeah.
And, you know, they had one of the Stoyanovich brothers at one point and Paul Edinger. I mean, they've had some really good place kickers, and it's been an abject disaster this year. I mean, they brought in a freshman, Jack Stone, who, you know, you thought, well, this kid's clearly the heir apparent. Then they brought in this summer, they brought in Ben Patton to transfer from Auburn. And in the middle of camp, which is, you know, I understand why, because he graduated from Auburn and finished his degree and came to the program there. But I think that really disrupted a little bit of what was going on. And then there was an open competition and Stone had the job. And then they tried Patton, and it's been back and forth. And I don't even know who they'll trot out this week because, you know, Patton, obviously last week he has the miss at the end of the game. He has one blocked. He thought he had turned the corner the previous week against Rutgers by hitting a couple big ones in the fourth quarter, but no, but that was a windy day. So yeah, it has been a mess because that's leaving points on the board, and this team can ill afford to do that. You know, they've struggled to finish drives, and you know, when you get into the red zone, you got to at least put three up.
Yeah. Interesting. Seeing that, Chris, safe trip. Appreciate it. By the way, I have both kickers on my chart. Safe trip. And look forward to seeing you, and happy Thanksgiving to you and your family, whether they're in Butler or back home in Michigan.
For sure. Well, take care, guys, and we'll see you on Saturday.
Thanks.